The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the big show, Your Money with David Hayes. People are texting me, and my phone's going off, and I'm putting it on silent so you don't have to hear all that stuff as we kick off the program. Thanks for being with us. We're going to have a good one today. Hot Rod Holloway will call in just a few minutes. We're going to be talking about, of course, a market update. But, you know, as we get ready for the show, let's do a little news of the week brought to you by the Monroe County Sports Hall of Fame. If you want to learn more about the Monroe County Sports Hall of Fame, go to mcshof.com. And I just found out on February 7th there will be a live broadcast somewhere because I was invited to come participate in that and be interviewed as part of the group that sponsored Monroe County Sports Hall of Fame to get it off the ground, what, about 7-8 years ago now. So I can't believe it's been that long, but it's probably, I guess, what they're going to announce the new class. I don't even know what they're doing. But anyway, doing something on the 7th of February, so you'll want to tune in for that. All right, the S&P 500, it's gained 26.2% total return, that includes dividends, during the first year of the Trump administration. That result is more than double the index's trailing 50-year average of 10.1% over the last 5 decades. Folks, things tend to revert to the mean, just so you know. Eventually, to get back to the mean, we would have to pretty much have zero, and that would get you right back to the mean. The average price of gasoline nationwide on Friday was about $2.54 a gallon. We talked about this last week on my birthday week, but the average price of gasoline in 1968, I was born in 1970, wait a second, yeah, here we go, was 34 cents a gallon. If you adjust for inflation of that 34 cents a gallon from 1968 up to 2018, and here, let me tell you real quick why I paused, because it said 1968, i.e. 50 years ago. I'm thinking, wait a second, I was born in 70. I was not even close to 50 years ago. I'm like, oh, yeah, it really is close to 50 years ago. So, gets going fast, folks. But here's the thing. When you take 34 cents a gallon adjusted for inflation for 50 years, that equates to a 2018 price of $2.47 a gallon. So inflation-adjusted gasoline prices over the last 50 years really hasn't changed that much. Talking demographics, we talked peak enrollments in universities, I believe, last week. But we are finding out that more people are renting, not owning. In the United States, they've added 8 new renter households in the last decade for every 1 new owner household, for a total of 7.8 million new renters versus the 965,000 new owners. When young people enter the workforce, they do not own, they rent. That's the way it happens. And then lastly, getting out of Dodge, something else, and this has to do with taxes more than anything else. For every 2 families that moved into Vermont last year, just 1 family moved out, making Vermont the top moving-in destination state overall. For every 1 family that moved into Illinois, 2 families left, making Illinois last on the same list. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Hot Rod Holloway. He's going to get us through the market, what's happening, what we're looking forward to, and more. This is Your Money with David Hayes. You know, we're only really a few weeks into 2018, and stocks are showing monster performance so far. I mean, even last week, all major indices posted gains once again, with all 3 up at least 5% for the year. So what happened last week? Well, 2 main key topics drove the conversation: corporate earnings and government shutdown. Well, government shutdown is far behind us, but corporate earnings continue to be strong. 79% actually beat their projections. 79% beat projections. 89% exceeded sales estimates. So I'm going to talk to Rod now on the phone. Rod, you know, with that potential shutdown that loomed last week, bam, investors overreacted just a little bit by showing a little volatility in the market. But as soon as You know, the earnings came out. It sort of watered things down when it came to worry about Washington and back to fundamentals. But this thing continues to cook along.
Yeah, it most certainly does. Now, the unfortunate thing is within another 10 days, we may have another government shutdown talk. But, yeah, you know, what I have really liked about this market in 2017 as we head into 2018, it's fundamentally driven, just as you alluded to. Sales increases, earnings increases, revenue increases. It's looking good across the board for many industries, many sectors, and lots of different companies. And while there's always been lots of talk about the corporate tax cuts and those types of things, you know, we still don't believe that's fully priced in, because the reality is most of those corporations are just really starting to do a deep dive into how big of an impact it will have on their bottom line when that's kicked in. So we still don't even really know the full positive impact of all of those things. But anytime you're in a fundamentally driven rally, that's a good place to be, because there is good, sound, fundamental reason for the market to continue to move up. Now, you'd mentioned volatility. I do think, regardless of what the reason is, whether it is dysfunction in D.C. or whatever else, we probably will begin to see volatility creep back into this market. For one, we ended the year and started this year at an ultra-low historic volatility play that we just haven't typically seen in the past. So it only makes sense that we begin to see a pickup in the volatility. Now, what we've seen so far early this year, the pickup in volatility really has just been in intraday swings. It's not been a negative thing, but intraday we've had large swings in which we're up a lot, and then maybe we sell off and we finish down a little bit, or we start down a little bit and we finish up a lot. Or some days we're up a lot, we were down a decent amount, and then we still finished up. So the market has been fairly fluid and volatile this year, but not necessarily in reaction to anything negative, which normally volatility tends to spike on the sell side more so than on the buy side.
This is kind of a global rally as well. And I saw today in the Wall Street Journal that the dollar drops to a three-year low. I hadn't really been paying much attention to the dollar, but that's actually probably a pretty darn good thing, because that would cheapen up goods for trade, could boost exports, maybe spark a little inflation. So once again, I mean, things kind of come out of left field. I wasn't even paying attention to this, and there it was. So that was a good sign as well. I do think that the Fed could have a harder time than maybe what people think in raising rates three or four times this year. So we'll see how that kind of shakes out. They've got to keep this yield curve in mind, and it's so flat right now. Not sure. They have their big balance sheet they have to start unwinding. There's just so much there. Doug Hughes now joins us in the studio, and I know he likes to chime in on these topics. He's a thinker. He's a reader. Hey, Doug.
Yeah. Hey, Rod, how are you doing this afternoon?
I'm doing wonderful. Thanks, Doug.
From an equity portfolio manager perspective, I'm curious to know if you have any thoughts or any insights about our new Fed Reserve Chairman, Jerome Powell.
Yeah, you know, I think he's going to do a wonderful job. Number one, he's not too far off of Yellen. Not that we want a clone of Yellen, otherwise you keep Yellen. But I think the biggest thing is you really didn't want to spook the market with somebody who was going to come in with a completely different approach, completely different opinion, and really kind of turn the market upside down with how they're going to do things. So he isn't exactly Janet Yellen, but he does come from some similar thought processes and has similar views of how things should work moving forward. So, yeah, I think he's going to be a very solid replacement. I think he will do a very good job there. The Fed has a tough job. You know, part of what goes into their job and their decision-making is predicting what's going to happen in the future. And as we always discuss, that's almost impossible, because when you make a prediction and say this is what you believe is going to happen, you're probably going to be wrong. You may be correct in the direction of things, or whether things are good or better or improving or getting worse, but actually nailing some of the numbers, which they try and do as far as inflation targeting, those types of things, that's a tough, tough job. But yeah, I think he's going to be a very solid Fed replacement for Yellen. And while Yellen maybe didn't get a lot of praise, I think she did a very good job while she was there at the head of the Fed.
Rod, we've been obviously on this fantastic run. Not all stocks have gone up. I mean, it's certainly been driven by a handful of things. But what I'm hearing more of now, and I want to get your and part of, folks, part of this whole show is to not, you know, woo you and, you know, impress you, but really impress upon you things that you should be thinking about, talking about, and engaging your advisor about. So it's really more about education than anything else. But Rod, I've been hearing a lot now about aligning yourself with money managers who aren't just cap-weighted, meaning weighting to the caps, which is kind of what I just referred to. Obviously, that works well when, you know, rising tides lifts all boats. But factor investing, factor-based investing, that's been a term that I used to hear years ago, starting to hear it a little bit more now. Is that a term that you're familiar with or something that you would encourage people to take a look at?
You know, I'm familiar with the term. I view it similar to smart beta, which is another hot term that's thrown around out there. The problem with some of those terms, and when they tend to get some traction, everybody jumps on the bandwagon and starts utilizing that term that, hey, we're factor-based investors, or we use smart beta. The reality is, the more you hear the industry talk about it and the more that they say that they're bringing out portfolios to do it, the more that type of a strategy really gets watered down.
Or absolute return. That's another one. It got way overused.
Way overused.
Exactly. So maybe the beginning stages of factor-based or smart beta had some good strategies behind it, and they had good success. But the broader it becomes, it really ends up becoming a marketing tool, because it seems to be the hot topic that people start flowing their money into it simply because of the name on the fund or the ETF that includes that. Now, of course, one of the things we've always done, and we believe in, it's not really smart beta or factor-based testing, the purpose-driven portfolio. And really all that means is, what's this money to be used for you? That's the best way to drive that type of money. Now, whether the money manager is using smart beta or factor-based to find the best investments for you within that purpose, I don't know that that's a huge deal. You know, you want to look at their track record. How have they done, regardless of what they call the strategy? Understand the risk that they're willing to take on, so that you don't just jump on the bandwagon because the title sounds right or the performance looks great, but you ignored how much risk they took to get that type of performance. I think that's really more key for the retail investor to analyze versus hot term that the street likes to throw out there, and then everybody jumps on that bandwagon, and all of a sudden, every mutual fund family has a factor-based fund or a smart beta fund.
Right. That's what we have you, Hot Rod, for, is to evaluate those things and pick them for us. I'm just the architect of the plan. You're the builder and the supervisor of the plan. Hey, last week we discussed on the show predicting and versus forecasting, muting the sound of intellectual noise. It's probably as true as it's ever been. I mean, you're trying to mute out all of this intellectual noise. You mentioned earlier, when you predict something, you're typically going to be wrong. Just to reinforce to people, Rod, the importance of muting the sound of what they believe to be intellectual intelligence out there when it comes to investing.
Oh, most certainly. I mean, the reality is that most of the people that are getting the press and are on TV and talking about it and that thing, they have an agenda. Mm-hmm. They have a portfolio that they want to see do well. So based on that is partially what's driving their talk. So, yeah, you do have to be cautious in listening to those things, because you can easily hear stories that say that, oh, my gosh, things look really bad for some. And others tell you it looks really good. Well, how can it be really bad and really good all at the same time? The reality is, it isn't. Those people have different portfolios. They have different things that are going to have a positive or negative effect on their portfolio. And that's typically what's driving their talking points.
Can anyone say the name Bill Gross? Bill Gross was notorious. Famous bond manager, now Janus, was at PIMCO. Notorious for coming out, making a statement of why interest rates were going to, you know, go up, and he would have his portfolio position perfectly for that to happen, because his words seemed to move the market. So Bill Gross was the number one culprit of that, and I think he probably still is. Hot Rod, we'll let you go. I know you got a busy day, and I know you got some things going on, so we'll let you go. We'll talk to you in the morning.
All right, sounds good, Dave. Have a great show.
Okay, see you, bud. All right, guys, last week when I talked about demographics and predictability, I talked about peak enrollments in universities. Well, in the HT last week, started to talk about the decreasing enrollments in the universities, not the flagship campus here in Bloomington, but their other campuses around the states. They mentioned two reasons. typically when the economy is bad, like back in 08, 09, people flood into the universities to get education and try and improve their chances of getting a job and making more money. But they also mentioned demographics, something that you cannot fight. I thought that was pretty cool. All right, we come back. We're going to talk with Doug Hughes. We got him for about 10 or 15 minutes. We're going to talk about some of the changes in the College Indiana 529 plan. Choices have expanded. Also, one of the best, bar none, tools to put money into health savings accounts. We want to talk about the remarkable tax advantage it offers, and I'm sure we'll throw in a few stories here and there about whatever's on our mind. We'll be back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. Doug Hughes, the co-author of Today's Guide to Retirement Planning, with yours truly, is in mm-hmm. the studio. Doug, I was thinking about our book. It has been, what, it was, this is in May, it'll be 3 years.
Was it
no,
12?
15.
15. 15.
Yeah, we started working on it in 12.
Well, that's right.
Actually, probably
yeah,
started working
right.
in 02.
That's but, right, yeah.
Yes,
3 years coming
three
up,
years.
2018.
We're going to work our tails off to put a revision together this year, adding a section on retirement distribution strategies and also mm-hmm. updating the rules on Social Security, which I'm going to get to in just a little bit. Because a lot of people think the Social Security rules, when they changed, they took away all of the opportunities to do some of these creative strategies. Well, it didn't take away all of them for everybody, so we want to make sure that we clear that up and walk people through some of the basics of Social Security. Before we do that, though, I wanted to talk about the Indiana 529 plan. Mm-hmm. And it's really 529 plans overall. This is kind of part of the Tax Reform Act as well, that they've expanded the uses. Now, why do I think this is kind of a neat thing? At first, I thought, okay, I can now use it for elementary or junior high or private high school. Now, Daniel, both of our kids went to private elementaries. Mine to Clear Creek Christian, yours as well.
Yep.
And then Lighthouse, and mm-hmm. there's a lot of project schools and different places around. And typically, we just paid out of pocket, right?
Right.
Well, now you could open a 529 plan and put money into that, even if you're going to pull it right out to pay for school. So here's the strategy. I don't know. I forget what the tuition is. Call it $2,500. I don't know what it is. I forget. Long removed from that, Doug.
Yes, long removed.
Long removed. Yes. You're still knee deep in it.
I'm still doing it, yeah.
But do you even know what the tuition is?
I don't. Actually, I do, but I'm not going to say it.
Well, they can look it up online. Yes, it's no big deal. So here's the thing. Let's pretend like it's, let's say it's $5,000. I don't think it is, but let's say it is. So, maybe you're out here at St. Chuck's or some other school. You could put $5,000 into the 529 plan. You receive a 20% tax credit from the state or $1,000 cash back. Boom. And then just pull the money right back out. It's called the put and pull. You can do that and then pay for the school. So you can do that through elementary, junior high, high school, and then even in college, keep doing it. I mean, people forget that you don't have to leave it in there very long. Now, you need to leave a dollar in, but, put it and pull it. So that's one good strategy. The other thing I've encouraged people to do is to think about opening a 529 plan, even if you have no beneficiaries right now. Because you could open one, Doug, use mm-hmm. the owner and use the beneficiary. Let's say you were 30 years old, no kids, not married. Don't smile. Don't smile.
I'm just thinking about being 30 again. That's what right. I was thinking.
Well, I said that last week when we were talking about my birthday, turning 48, and someone sent me a note that said, happy 25th. I'm like, I don't think I want to go back there.
No.
In fact, I like my 40s. I just wish I could kind of stay here. But let's pretend, and you didn't have any dependents or whatever. You could open one up, put money in, take your tax credits, do that 4, 5, 6 years down the road. You get married, you have kids. Now you've built up a nice little 529 mm-hmm. plan, flip the beneficiary over to your child, and away you go. So it's really, to me, a great just tax planning tool, regardless of what and who gets the benefit of it.
Well, and don't forget about, we often talk about the credit, but the reality is that these dollars are invested in asset allocation funds or age-based funds, and so there are growth opportunities within that. So not only do you get the tax credit, we should always remind people, too, that you can participate in the capital markets and enjoy some returns along the way.
Let's talk about health savings accounts. Now, if you have a high-deductible plan, it's likely that you have an HSA, and I think one of the biggest mistakes people make is they use their HSAs as they go. So here's the thing. When you put money into an HSA, the money goes in tax-free. So it goes in pre-tax, kind of like your pre-tax contributions to a 401k. But the beauty of an HSA is that when you take the money out for qualified expenses, it comes out tax-free as well. There's nothing else out there, Doug, that you can put in tax-free and take and grows You can invest that as well and pull it out tax-free. And here's the real cool thing. It can become a retirement income plan for you. Currently, federal law allows HSA owners up to 65 or older to withdraw funds from their HSA for any purpose tax-free, basically repaying themselves for past out-of-pocket expenses. So there's a lot of opportunity here for people to just cram as much money in. Don't use it while in your working life. Build this monster Roth IRA that wasn't funded with after-tax dollars, but pre-tax dollars. You can do it all the way up until your age 65, and use it in retirement for all kinds of things. I mean, you could use it for just income. You could use it to pay for insurance. You could use it to pay for, you know, eyeglasses, hearing aids, all the things that Medicare doesn't cover. HSA plan, Duggar, you just said it. We probably need to do one at our office. Let's get on Dano about that.
You know, I was talking to a group today, and you know, one of the things that people tend to miss out on is opportunities. And I'm not talking about buying a specific investment when it's low and it goes very high.
Right.
A lot of people just don't know what opportunities are in front of them for the different vehicles to accumulate some investments along the way.
Max it out.
And create some net worth. And also, what I think a lot of people perhaps don't really, again, begin to understand is, like, for the HSA, this is like a health Roth IRA.
It is.
And
that could ultimately be used for anything.
Ultimately
you want.
Used for, yeah, exactly right. And so I just encourage everyone, if you're not working with a financial professional, to maybe, you know, get together with someone to say, what are the opportunities in front of me? What is out there that I can, you know, put my dollars towards?
I had a question last week from someone that said, should I fund more of my 401k or should I fully fund my HSA? No questions, hands down. First HSA, second 401k. Obviously put the money in to get the match, but you want to put the HSA first, not last. And I think in most people's lives, they haven't looked at it that way. They've looked at it as that health savings account and put it in, use it to pay for this. Don't use it, put it in, max it out, and
let it
rock and roll. All right, Duggar, I know I got you for just a few more minutes. When we come back, why don't we talk about some Social Security stuff? Serving up a slice of the retirement pie. Social Security obviously is a big piece of that pie, so we're going to talk about all of that. Also, some of the claiming strategies that are still available for some people out there where you can maximize benefits using some of these spousal strategies that we used to talk about a lot. We quit talking about it because a lot of them went away, but for a certain group of people, they're still there. So we'll talk about that. And I'm sure a lot more. We'll be back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. All right, welcome back, everyone. Yo Mo with David Hayes. Duggar Hughes is in the house with
hey.
Me as well. He's going to be traveling after the show up to Indianapolis. So
yes.
Wish you safe travels. He's got a beautiful afternoon,
yeah.
Late evening here. Mm-hmm. You can drive up there and not hit any black ice, hopefully. Doug, obviously, Social Security is such a big part of people's retirement plans. In fact, it's 33% of the income of current retirees in America. And people are always worried about the state of Social Security, and right now reserves are sufficient to fund benefits, full benefits, through 2035, according to the Social Security Administration. And then after that, they say tax payments in will cover at least 75% of promised benefits through 2091. That'll outlive all of us. So, you know, the state of Social Security, although may not be great, it's not, you know, dire. We're still, money's still there. But my feeling is there will be adjustments made sooner than later to fully fund this thing forever. And many of those ideas could be means testings. It could be raising the taxable wage base from the current, like, 117 up to maybe 250. But there's a lot of things that they'll fix but to make it work. But just like everything else in this country, nothing happens until we have a crisis.
That's
so
right.
I wouldn't expect it anytime really, really soon. Doug, there's a couple other things I want to talk about. Just eligibility real quick. People who are full retirement today at 66 for most people, but then you get to a point where, you know, it's 66 in 2 months and 66 in 8 months and 10 months, then ultimately age 67, like for you and I, it's age 67. But a lot of people make a huge mistake in filing early. I mean, right now, if you take benefits early, you're going to reduce your benefit by 30%.
Mm-hmm.
Well, doesn't take long. In fact, a lot of folks get confused on these break-even analysis, but right now, if you're 62, according to Social Security Office, and you can go to the Retirement Planner, Delayed Retirement Planning retirement credits over at the Social Security website, and they'll tell you where these break-even points are. You're 62, basically, the breakover point is age 78. So if you live past 78, you would have been better off taking it at 66. Or if you took it at 66, the break-even point, if you would have waited to 70, is 82 and a half years. Mm-hmm. So for me, most people are probably going to expect to live past that. But even if you don't, the last thing on your mind, if you're on your deathbed, is saying, oh my gosh, I wish I would have taken Social Security earlier. I don't think I've ever seen that.
No, that's not one we have seen. And honestly, David, what we always say to people about Social Security is you need to do an analysis. You need to, you know, the old saying, measure twice, cut once.
Right.
You need to really think about it. But Social Security also needs to be viewed in the overall portfolio. Where does it fit? What part of the portfolio is going to be interrupted by taking Social Security earlier rather than later? The other thing we always try to encourage people to do is to wait until at least full retirement age for tax purposes as well. But Social Security, as we know, was brought about in a time when our life expectancies weren't as long, but it has really proven to be a very valuable plan for the people who are on it. It's proven to be a very valuable mm-hmm. and good plan for the people who have received it. Along the way, are there people who don't need it who get it? Probably so. There have been a lot of strategies that have been, you know, used in all kinds of,
right.
you know, exotic ways, I'm sure. But really, it is something that everyone who is an American and has Social Security credits out there needs to take a very strong look at. And don't do this unadvisedly, because here's the thing. We can go through all the break-even analysis. We can go through all that. We don't know when you're going to die. We don't know what your health is. But we do know that if there are two people living in one home, okay,
mm-hmm.
and they're both receiving Social Security, that the smaller of those two Social Security checks stops coming in.
Right.
And all of a sudden your tax bracket changes too. So there's more to Social Security than just, and we're all guilty,
I know.
Open the letter. What do I get at 62? What do I get at 66? What do I get at 70? There's more planning that needs to be involved.
If you take benefits before your full retirement age, so it's 66 or whatever it might be, you decide to continue to work, just know that there's some earnings limitations out there. For next year, it's $17,040. Now, the way this works is if you make more than that, then Social Security would withhold $1 of benefits for every $2 above that limit. Now, if you stop working, it restores that. Now, the first year of full retirement age, so if I retired today, but I was 66, let's say in July, then that income limit goes up quite a bit that first year of full retirement age. So I could make up to $45,360. The other thing people get a little bit, I don't know if they get sideswiped, but I would say maybe sometimes sideswiped by, is taxes on Social Security. I don't know if people don't know it, but you can have taxes withheld from your Social Security check. You check one of three boxes, and boom, they'll take it away for you, and you don't have to worry about it. But here's the thing. Up to, and in most cases, almost everyone we work with, up to 85% of their Social Security benefit is taxable at the federal level. It's not taxed at the state level, but it's something that does catch people off guard occasionally. He caught someone off guard today whenever I was talking to them about their Social Security. He said, yeah, last year was the full first time I received it all year long.
Mm-hmm.
It was $25,000. And I said, oh, okay. Well, did you have taxes withheld? I can't remember. He said, no, I didn't. So, okay, well, you know, you're going to owe about $3,000 in taxes on
yeah.
that Social Security, so just get ready to write the check.
And David, just for our listeners, when does that stop? Is there ever a point when you're not taxed on your Social Security?
Well, if you don't make very much, if you're a married filing joint.
But if you're fully retired, just for our listeners, if you're fully retired and you're withdrawing money from your IRAs and pensions
it's
and
taxable.
You're getting Social Security, you're
yeah.
still taxable.
It's taxable, man. So
yeah.
that gets people because they
and they don't understand because when you're fully retired, you can work, right? And still get the full benefit.
They mix
but
those
that's
things
they get,
up. They mix the working limitation, earnings, and taxation.
Yeah.
And I remember we were teaching a class years ago, and I said, you know, up to 85% of your Social Security is taxable. And the lady goes, oh! And I go, what? She goes, 85% of my is taxed? And I said, well, yeah. I can't, that's ridiculous. And come to find out what she thought was,
85.
The tax was 85%.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
she was only going to keep 15 cents of every dollar
yeah.
promised. Hey, real quick, before we let you, I know you got to get out of here, but it used to be we talked a lot about these claiming strategies where, you know, you would file for your benefit, but then suspend your benefit, and then your spouse could claim their spousal benefit while letting both benefits delay up to age 70 and then turning on these massive income benefits. Well, that all went away a couple years ago, but it didn't go away completely. The suspended application definitely went away, but the restricted application still is in play for people that are in that early 60s group. If you were 62 before January 1st a couple years ago, and your spouse was too, you could potentially still do a restricted application. Now, how that works, I have to be filed and claiming my benefit for my spouse to claim her spousal benefit. So let's say my benefit was $2,000. I turn it on, I'm getting my $2,000. My wife is entitled to 50% of that benefit, or $1,000. So she gets $1,000, that's $3,000 for the household. Now, if she also had an earnings record, her earnings record would continue to delay. She could wait until 70 and then flip over and take her own benefit. So let's say that at that point, it's like $3,000. That's a great claiming strategy. You want the higher income earner, the higher benefit, to be the one that actually restricted their application to spouse and also let theirs delay. So my dad is an example. He would have been the higher income earner between he and Jeannie. Well, he restricted. Well, he did the old-fashioned way, but he actually, she took benefits. He restricted, took a spousal benefit. He did that for 4 years and then flipped over and took his age 70 benefit, and that's like $3,300 a month. And to Doug's point, if my dad passed away, Jeannie steps up to his benefit, $3,300. And we talked about the taxes on Social Security. Yeah, it stinks, but it's still better, more tax efficient than other dollars. I mean, if you take a dollar out of an IRA, 100% of it's taxed. If you take money from Social Security, 85% of it is taxed, or 50%. And sometimes not taxed at all if you don't have much income. And it's not taxed at the state level. So that's still available for people that have been married for 10 years, divorced, and not remarried before they took benefits. And the other big one, Doug, is death benefits. Death benefits are still available at age 60 for a widow or widower, as long, again, as if they haven't remarried before taking benefits.
Absolutely. There's just a lot of education, a lot of planning. Don't go haphazardly at this, folks. Just make sure you find someone who can help you and guide you through the Social Security planning process. Because, David, these are decisions that really you can't turn back around from.
That's right.
I think you have 1 year and you can pay it back and then kind of restart. But aside from that, once you're in, you're kind of on the path.
It's pretty much an irrevocable decision. All right. Hey, if you would like, and we're not going to, you know, do this forever, but if you would like for someone at my office to do a Social Security plan for you, to say, when is it the most ideal and appropriate time for me to take Social Security? They're going to need some other information, like other things going on in your world and life, but for the most part, our software will spit out exactly when you're supposed to take it. And we finally found a software package that actually lines up with our beliefs. So, you know, it's kind of funny when you think, I don't like that output, so I don't like that software. But the reality of it is that we had to feel comfortable with the numbers behind the numbers, and I do. So if you'd like for someone in my office to do a free analysis of your Social Security benefit, shoot us an email at cfci.us. We'll connect you with Kevin in our office. He'll get everything that you need, or everything he needs, to make sure that you get what you need as well. All right, Doug, we're going to take a break. When we come back, you won't be here. You're going to be on the road, so we
have a great show.
A safe trip. But when we get back, we're going to do some more tax planning stuff, 2018 and beyond. We'll be back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Oh, I found something out that I thought was pretty interesting. You heard me talk about my venture into a discount establishment a few weeks ago. I'm not allowed to mention them by name, so I'm not going to do it. But did you know that if something costs a dollar and they have things on clearance, it's only 50 cents? 50 cents. That's it. How can you pass up Christmas ribbons and wrapping paper and all of that for 50 cents? So anyway, I'm not saying that I know somebody that actually loaded up on 50 cent post-Christmas deals, but I'm just saying that if we're talking about YOMO, I mean, that's pretty good use of your dollars. You know what? I want to tell you guys this too. I got did I tell you this? I got a smoker for Christmas. Now I'm big into cooking. I love to cook. And, you know, have a traditional grill if you just want me burgers and hot dogs. And then a few years ago, my wife bought me the big green egg for Christmas. And a lot of you guys out there are egg guys. I don't ever meet any egg women. I mean, it seemed like the guys, they're the only ones stupid enough to pay all that money for this great big ceramic oven cooker thing. But it is good. I mean, it's fun. But you have to work at it. I mean, you have to put the charcoal in. You have to, you know, monitor the heat and all that. I mean, it's just, it's fun. You know, a nice summer day to cook, you know, cook a big pork shoulder or something. That's a lot of fun. And then about a year ago, my wife bought me, and this is all for Christmas. There's kind of a pattern here. She bought me something called the Big Easy. The Big Easy is an infrared cooker, and it's kind of cool. It's like a greaseless turkey fryer, and I've used that to cook all kinds of things in. And then for this Christmas, I wanted a real smoker. Now, you can smoke in the egg, but this is a real smoker. So I bought got at a Bass Pro Shops. It's funny because when I'm on the couch at night, I go to the websites, Cabela, Bass Pro Shops, all these different places, and I will just shop. I don't buy anything, but I shop, and it all goes into a cart. Well, my wife can just open that up and just buy the card if she wants. And that's actually what she did this year. And this smoker was in there. So anyway, I get the smoker, and it's a nice little smoker, but not real fancy. Propane. You hook up the propane so the gas comes on. It's simple. And then you slip wood tray in, a big wood tray, and that's what smokes the meat. So, and the more you use a smoker or anything, it seasons it and it makes it even better. So I did a big pork shoulder on Sunday. And I'll tell you what, that thing turned out so good. I can't even believe how good it is. And there's only three people in my house, so we don't eat a lot, and we don't feed it to the dog. So I shredded it up, took it to the office, and been eating on it all week long. And the people at the office are telling me that this is the best pulled pork that they have ever had. So I'm just saying, if I have anybody out there listening that wants me to challenge them in a cook-off, I'm ready, because I've got this thing down to a science. And I'm telling you right now that it's very economical, too. If you go out and buy a pork shoulder, a pork butt, Boston butt, whatever you want to call it, you could feed an army for, you know, $15 or $20. So it's a very good use of dollars, and you always have to spin stories back to your money, right? Because it's your money that this show is all about. All right. Let's see. I got a few more things I wanted to talk about. Let's see. So I had a chance to talk with a group of people this morning, actually. And really, you know, not everyone gets to listen to the show. Not everyone is a podcast listener. So I have to take the show on the road sometimes. And that's what we did this morning. And I was really, really pounding this topic in. And I thought to myself, you know, I can't say this enough to people, because I know some of you listen every single week, and I'm so gracious and humbled that you do. But some people just catch it every once in a while. And I know that because I have done topics on Social Security like we did before many times. And then all of a sudden someone says to me, hey, I was listening to your show the other day and heard about this. I didn't know that. I never heard that before. I'm like, well, I've only talked about it maybe 100 times. Well, that means they haven't listened the other 99 times, or it didn't apply to them. I mean, I have learned over the years that if something simply doesn't apply to me at that time, I tend not to retain it or even pay attention to it. So that could be the issue as well. But I was pounding the pavement on this tax planning, and I was hitting this story, you know, about David Walker, and he's the comptroller of the United States of America back under Bush and Clinton, you know, and he started saying, hey, if things don't change, we're going to have to double taxes just to pay for the things we've already promised. You know, I'm up there just beating my chest saying, come on, guys, you got to get behind me on this. And then we talked about the Roth IRA, the Roth 403Bs, and why anyone, especially a young person, why would anybody put money into an account pre-tax? That means I know what the tax rate is today. It's 12%. It's, you know, whatever, 24%, 22%, or 24% or 32%. I know what the cost of that is today for me to take that money from my paycheck and put it into a Roth account. I know what the cost is today. Then it grows tax-free, and then I can take it out tax-free. Doesn't that sound good? And everyone's like, yeah, that sounds great. Because we have no idea what the tax rate will be when we take it out in the end. So and they were like, yeah, this makes so much sense to me. So we pounded that in. I'm going to keep pounding that in, that just like Ed Slott said a few weeks ago on the show, he said, hey, it's, you know, I've used this stuff before too, but it's like going to the bank and borrowing the money, right? And they say, and you say, well, how much do I have to pay you back? And they say, well, we'll let you know when we need the money, and we'll let you know what the interest rate is and how much we need. Well, that's pretty much what we've done with these retirement accounts. We've said, okay, I'll put the money in pre-tax, not pay the tax on the seed. I'm going to let the money grow tax deferred. And then down the road, 10 or 20, 30 years, I'm going to pull it out and it will be taxable at an unknown rate. Listen, this is what I told these people too this morning. Listen, the money that the corporation puts in for you goes to the side that you'll pay taxes later. why add fuel to that fire? Put the money that you're putting in into the after-tax side. You'll be glad you did. Because at some point, either I'm just really off or something miraculous is going to have to happen, but at some point, taxes will go up. Or they're going to figure out a way to force people to take more money out of their 401ks and their IRAs. Like right now, when you turn 70 and a half, you have to start taking money out, right? But it's 3.65% of the account balance. Well, what if they sit, and that assumes that they use what's called a unified table. It assumes that you have a spouse that's 10 years younger, and that's why you don't have to take out that much. But what if they change that to a table that assumed you had no spouse, and it's called a single table? Well, now your distributions year one go up by about 30%. And all of a sudden, by age 80, when under the unified table, it's just over 5, it's now like 7 or 8%. I mean, they're going to force this money out to get the revenue somehow, some way. And that's a way they could do it without actually increasing tax rates. Roth IRAs have no minimum distributions. So there's just so many things that I'm trying to encourage people to do. And if you're listening to the show week after week and you're like, oh my gosh, he's talking about this again, hey, it's the greater good that I'm trying, the greater good for the greater number. So occasionally I'm going to have to repeat myself to make sure we get the point across. And I'll try to come up with different analogies and different ways to put it. But, you know, I think, you know, a lot of people kind of get the analogy of paying off the debt. You know, if you take $100,000 out of your retirement account, what's it worth? It's worth about $60,000. That's a lien, that's a debt against your IRA. So what about paying that off? I mean, a lot of people want to pay their house off before they retire, right? Why not pay off the taxes on your retirement accounts before you retire? So that's the stuff you got to continue to get in your head. And I had a client this week, lives up north. I'm sure he's going to listen to the show, so I'm going to give him a shout out. My man, Ray, big play, Ray. We were talking about Roth conversions, and he's going to be 70 and a half next year, and we've been doing conversions for many years, and he's pretty well positioned now to where not much of his money is taxable. But he's like, okay, now with these low tax rates, let's do more. And I'm like, well, here's the thing, Ray. Next year, you give money every month to your church. Yeah, we're going to start qualified charitable distributions. And when we start taking the money out of the IRA, it's non-taxable. It goes to the charity. It satisfies your minimum distribution. I said, we can whittle the rest of the IRA down that way. So just by having and he's like, that's great. I mean, it didn't cost him anything. So by having a good understanding of Ray's situation and what he does and what he means, what he stands for, and what he hopes to accomplish, we were able to come up with a solution. So just a lot of really, you know, good things that come from this planning. And I think if you sit back and don't do anything at all, you're going to be glad. You're going to be really sorry and glad that you listened. Sorry you didn't, and glad that you listened to the show and implemented some of these things that we've talked about. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll wrap up the big show. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Hey, everyone. I ran way over in the last segment. I apologize. I got to go. We'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.